No one expects 2021 to be the same type of roller coaster ride as we had in 2020. And while there's plenty of good news for our economy and our property markets, it's important to remember that considerable uncertainty remains, and the extreme dislocation to many businesses that happened over the last couple of years has still got to resolve itself. But there's general optimism at the moment in the marketplace, and that's well founded. We seem to have this virus thingy under control. Around 90% of the jobs lost during the pandemic have been restored. And that's a tremendous achievement. And our property markets are rebounding. Australia and the world stands on the cusp of the biggest vaccination rollout in human history, which is only going to increase the rising levels of consumer and business confidence we're experiencing. Sure, the COVID roller coaster may be slowing, but we still face a bumpy road to economic recovery, and that's what I'm going to be discussing today with Pete Wargent, as well as giving you five of my predictions for our property market in 2021. I'm optimistic about our future, but this year is going to require optimism balanced with realism, because that's what gives us resilience. So welcome to today's show, as I'm going to give you some clarity about what's ahead.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment, and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialize in helping you grow, protect, and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now, here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
Seems that everyone's making predictions for our housing markets for 2021, and they're all extremely positive. Look, while on the one hand I love to hear this, on the other hand, I'm always concerned when everybody thinks the market's going to perform in a particular way, as we've seen how wrong consensus opinion's been over the last few years. Having said that, I agree that we're at the beginning of a new property cycle, and all the bits of the property puzzle seem to be falling into place, and it looks like we're going to have a great year ahead, a great couple of years ahead for our property market. So today, I'd like to share some property trends that I think are going to occur in 2021, and I'm looking forward to Pete Wargent's views on these. Plus, we're going to discuss some economic trends that will influence our property markets moving forward. Now, by now, you'd know Pete's a chartered accountant, a chartered secretary, has a financial planning diploma, and Pete's used his long-term approach to building businesses, investing in equities, owning a substantial property portfolio to achieve financial independence in his early 30s. And that was quite some time ago, wasn't it, Pete? Welcome.
Yeah, I'm feeling the with every year that we have that conversation, I'm feeling a bit older and a few more grey hairs now with two kids. But yeah, it's been quite a journey. And as you said, things are looking up this year by the looks of it.
Well, aren't they? So what I thought I'd do is I'd start off giving you some of my thoughts of some trends that I see likely to happen moving forward. Love to get your input in them as well. And then we'll look at the big picture macroeconomic factors that could be influencing these trends. But Pete, I can see property demand from home buyers is going to continue to be strong. I mean, one of the leading indicators we both look at are finance housing approvals, and they're at record levels for owner-occupiers. They're rising a little bit for investors as well. And this comes at a time when finance is as cheap as it's ever been. So it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy. We were just talking before we clicked the record button that there's FOMO in the market already. People are starting to worry they're going to miss out.
Yeah, completely. So those latest housing finance figures, so there was a massive boom in refinancing last year because, as you know, a lot of people were coming off mortgages at 4 to 5% and they could get 2 to 3. So there was a big boom in refinancing. But even if you exclude that, housing finance is at record highs now. Now, even within that, you've got to remember there's been a massive boom in construction lending because of the home builder stimulus and the renovation grants that the government put in place. But yeah, I mean, regardless of all that, the first home buyers in particular have shot back to the highest levels we've seen almost ever. It was slightly higher in 2009 during the Rudd stimulus. And only now we're just starting to see investor lending pick up again. It's about half of what it was at the peak in 2015. So I think investors will start to come back in 2021. And as you said, I think a lot of people sat on their hands last year thinking, well, looks a bit hairy out there. But now, as you mentioned, people are seeing prices start to rise and get away from them. And it's a bit of a panic now as people rush to get into the market, just like every other cycle, I guess.
It is. The cycle moves on. Now, you beat me to my second prediction, which investors are coming back to squeeze out home buyers. But before we get on to that, I think the other thing that's going to allow home buyers to get into the market is the fact that they've stashed their cash. Savings, household savings, are the highest they've been since the mid-1970s. We're not spending it on the overseas trips. We're not even spending it on local trips. So people are buying cars. But I think they also feel they deserve a new car and maybe deserve a new home, Pete.
Yeah, well, wasn't last year a strange one? I think we came into 2021 with wages growth. It was very sluggish, just in the low 2% range. Then we had the sort of induced coma, if you like, for the economy with the COVID shutdown. And the government effectively unleashed piles of cash into the hands of households. And there was also early superannuation release. So a lot of people took the opportunity to shore up their balance sheets. And as you said, people could no longer take the traditional overseas trip. So for the past 15 years, Aussies have spent much more overseas than we've seen coming into the country from tourists. So that in itself has actually redirected an awful lot of Aussie dollars back into the country. Yeah, household savings rates absolutely shot up. They were nearly at 20% at the peak, which is extraordinarily high. So now people are starting to think, well, if I can't spend this on overseas travel, well, where can I put it? You can go into stock markets, you can buy a property or a new car. And we're seeing all of those. So, yes, it was a really unusual year.
I've seen various figures bandied around, but it's in the order of $60, even $70 billion worth of overseas travel spending that's got to go somewhere this year. Now, we also hinted at the fact that investors have been sitting on the sidelines, but they're going to come back. Already investor loans are increasing. The percentage of investors as a total percentage of all the loans is actually at historic lows. But when they come back, they typically compete for the same properties as first home buyers, Pete. So I can see there's going to be a bit of competition, which of course is only going to push up property values.
Yeah, so it's amazing where the time goes. It doesn't feel all that long ago that we were coming up to the 2019 election and the Labour Party, everybody thought, would win. They were going to phase out negative gearing. They were going to change the capital gains tax exemption. And we were already in a credit squeeze from APRA's clampdown on interest-only loans. So investor lending just kept falling and falling, and investors were just very reticent. Then we saw a change because the election didn't go as planned. I think there's every chance we'll see an election this year, with Australia probably one of only five countries that have emerged from COVID in a brilliant situation. So Morrison will likely try and capitalise on that. But Labor seems much less keen to take negative gearing as a policy to the election. So investors have effectively been given a green light. The Reserve Bank has said interest rates are going nowhere for the next 3 years. They're going to keep purchasing bonds to keep interest rates at record lows. So there's really no reason that investors won't come back. If you can borrow at 3% and get yields of 4 or 5 in many places, there's just no reason we won't see investors picking up this year. There may be some regulatory changes later in the cycle, but for now, I think it's more or less a no-brainer that we'll see a huge increase in investors over the next year or two.
Which brings me to my third prediction. Property prices are going to continue to rise. There's many factors to this. As we've said, the investors coming back in the market. But I think the main drivers are going to be increased consumer confidence. We got this virus thingy under control. Vaccinations are coming in, low interest rates, and they're going to be there to stay. People are already talking, Pete, about interest rates going up, and the Reserve Bank said, no, they're not. We're not going to put them up. We've got economic growth. And there's a favourable supply and demand ratio. So all the bits of the puzzle are fitting into place for most areas. Sure, I still think there's going to be certain segments of the market that are going to continue to suffer, particularly the city apartments, the inner city apartment towers and accommodation around universities.
Yeah, I think that's true. And there will be some parts of the economy that will be damaged. I think the one missing piece of the puzzle is obviously international borders. I think it's with every passing week and month, it seems like it will be longer until that gets back to some kind of normal. So that does damage some tourism businesses, obviously aviation and airports. So there'll be some sectors of the economy that will be looking for government support, and there will be some people that are hit by that, and potentially some employees in that industry as well. So it might just take a little while for unemployment to get back down to where we want it, in the 4-5% range, maybe a year or two. But for most people, they're emerging pretty strong position here. So with record low mortgage rates for the next few years, I think you're absolutely right. And in fact, mortgage serviceability of interest is at now the lowest level since the late 1990s. So you could see prices go 25% from here and ratios wouldn't be out of whack with their long run averages, assuming mortgage rates stay pretty low.
Sure. I think as we move forward, though, people won't forget the lessons from 2020, and many people are going to be prepared to pay a premium to be in the right sort of property in the right sort of neighbourhood. I think if coronavirus has taught us anything, Pete, it's the importance of living in the right property, but also in the right location. But by that, I mean, we're not talking about most investors think about capital growth, but most home buyers who drive the markets are going to think about their neighbourhood. They're going to want that 20-minute drive, bike ride, walk to as many activities as possible, shopping, business services, education, gyms, community facilities, and residents are appreciating the ability to be out and about and socialise. This 20-minute neighbourhood that town planners have been talking about for a long time is coming to reality.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's quite clear that people are less keen on the idea in recent years of living on the 15th or 20th floor of an apartment tower. I think, you know, there's been various reasons for that. There's been cladding. Now we've had a pandemic, some construction issues in Sydney in particular. Actually, just it's more than anything, just a numbers game. The types of tenants in those properties are often short stays or international tourists and students or new migrants to Australia. But of course, with immigration switched off, that's going to most directly impact those inner CBD high-rise markets that you mentioned. So until immigration comes on again, I think we'll see falling rents in some of those types of property. But as you've always said, really the best types of property to own, they're the ones that feel a bit more like a home. I think people get too hung up on the differentiation between house versus apartment in the mature capital cities. It's much more about a place that's desirable for owner-occupiers. I think that's really the key.
Yes, it is. Now, we kept talking a couple of times about the borders and immigration. It seems like it's going to take longer than we'd all hoped, only because even though Australia and New Zealand have got it under control, Europe and other countries haven't got the virus under control, so we're not going to be letting people in for a while. Just like, unfortunately, you're stuck in lockdown as we speak at the moment in the United Kingdom.
Yeah, it's funny the way these things play out. So the UK, at the time of speaking, is actually already vaccinated a fifth of the adult population, so 20% in record time, absolutely smashing through the vaccines. But other parts of the world are far, far behind that on that curve. All of Europe, obviously Australia. So there's only a few countries that have really got to grips with the vaccination program. I think until that plays out in full and until there are better systems in place, I think there'll be a lot of international travel restrictions probably all the way through 2021. So let's see how that plays out.
Oh, I think you're right there. Now, one of the predictions a lot of people made last, well, actually not a lot, it's the same people keep making it, is we're going to have property Armageddon. But they also say we're going to still fall off a cliff when JobKeeper and mortgage deferrals end in March. But most recent figures from APRA, and they bring them out every month now, show that 80% of those people who put their mortgages on hold, had a deferral, are starting to pay back. Pete, last week I was speaking with a senior banker who was telling me that the bank last year recommended to many of its clients to take on these mortgage deferrals to build them buffers, to build themselves buffers, their clients. But interestingly, they didn't need them, so they're back to repaying it. So we're not going to have a cliff. We may not even have much of a step in March.
Yeah, and the devil's really in the detail with this stuff. And you know, people don't really take their time to read beyond the headlines. But if you look at the monthly movements, and if you look at the risk profiles of the people who've deferred mortgages, and if you look at the borrowers who are continuing to make repayments, the numbers are starting to really drop away now. I think Victoria is a bit further behind because Victoria had a lockdown. But even then, by the time the 31st of March rolls around, and don't forget, APRA always reports with a month's lag as well, I think by then the numbers will be immaterial. And even then, there's very little incentive for banks to foreclose. In fact, Commonwealth Bank has already said no foreclosures through until until the 30th of September. So I think, you know, this issue will have well and truly gone away this year, just like the interest-only cliff did before it. That was supposed to be the thing that wrecked household balance sheets, but it never happened. And I think this will be the same.
Much the same, you're right. Now, the same banker who told me about their recommendations to their clients were also told me that they closed the doors last year. They were scared to lend more money. They weren't sure what was happening to the economy. But I believe now with the reduction in the bank's exposure to the potential of loan defaults, that's going to put them in a much stronger position to continue lending, to support the economic recovery, and to build their business again.
Yeah, and in fact, the Reserve Bank is more or less encourage the banks to do that. So they put in place the term funding facility at 0.1%. Give or take, about $90 billion has been tapped on that facility already. But there is the potential for banks to do the same amount again this year. So there's cheap funding available, and that's going to continue for some time. And banks will be encouraged to lend because we want to see people taking some risk and some of those animal spirits returning. And the good news for Australia is that does seem to be happening. So we can actually, like many other downturns and recessions, it will be housing that leads the way forward. We're going to see a lot of home building this year and investors coming back as well, as we've already covered. I guess that the one missing piece of that puzzle will be immigration. But even that need not be a negative necessarily. And I think if anything, it could help us to get unemployment down much quicker. We could see unemployment well below 6% this year as the year rolls on. So that can be a good news story as well.
Well, while immigration isn't at the levels that we need, and I think many of us want to grow our economy, expats are coming back and they're taking the place of a lot of the immigrants that would have come in before. Now, Pete, let's have a bit of a talk about the economy in general, because recently the International Monetary Fund upped its global GDP forecast to 5.5%, and Australia's economic growth is projected to be very strong as well. It sounds like we're going to have that V-shaped recovery that, I don't know, most of us didn't think was even going to be possible 12 months ago.
It was a very different kind of recession for Australia. So we almost had a mandated shutdown, I guess we probably surprised a lot of people, including myself, in effectively getting to a zero COVID situation. So now we've got all of that stimulus. And don't forget, it was an enormous stimulus, both fiscal and monetary. And it's all there now waiting to be deployed. So the economy will actually have fully recovered in terms of GDP by the middle of 2021. So that's a remarkably quick turnaround. We've already seen 90% of jobs come back, and the unemployment rate will continue to improve this year. So there's always things that could throw a spanner in the works, most notably if we have a shock outbreak of COVID. But I think even then, with vaccines becoming available, we should be able to muddle our way through. So I think a V-shaped economic recovery is playing out as we speak, and that's great news.
Isn't it? But the year started with a little bit of an inflation scare in the United States and in Australia, and some of the media already jumped on that and said, oh, the Reserve Bank's got to raise interest rates because we're getting inflation and because property prices are going up. But I thought the Reserve Bank wants us to have a tiny bit of inflation, Pete.
Well, yeah, I think Phil Lowe poured a lot of cold water on that in the latest statement. So I think importantly, what he said was that the Reserve Bank is going to stop looking at projected or forecast outcomes, and it will now focus on actual inflation outcomes. And if you look at the underlying measures of inflation, well, they're as low as we've ever seen, effectively in the low ones. So we've got a long way to go before inflation is sustainably back at target, and effectively there'll be no changes to interest rates, I guess, for at least 3 years and possibly longer.
That's good. Now, one of the factors that was missing last year was consumer confidence and also business confidence. We want businesses to be confident so that they can employ people, they can take on more stock, they can buy more machinery. But consumer confidence is important for spending. And if we lose confidence, it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy and things go down. But lots of Australians, as long as I remember, now think it's a good time to buy a property. So they're confident in their financial futures, they're confident in their jobs, and that's going to flow on. And in some ways, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, because as confidence increases and we get all the good media, more people hop into the market to spend and buy things.
Yeah, so consumer confidence has really bounced. It's actually at a 15-month high. So it's as high as we've seen since the pre-COVID days. And one of the measures I like to follow, which tends to be a really good leading indicator, is just what Westpac reports in its red book for particularly for the time to buy a dwelling and for the expectations of house prices. And both have just exploded back. You know, those numbers were showing that a few months ago, and a lot of people were doubtful, but they'll prove to be exactly right. You know, people, they're as near as we've got to a real-time indicator, the surveys, the economic surveys, and Westpac's is one of the best. So, yeah, and we can see that. You know, you've already probably seen this year. There's people getting a bit of FOMO now about getting back into the property market and worrying about prices getting away from them. And that, as you said, just becomes a self-fulfilling upward spiral as the year goes on. So, you know, people often think that we might be too bullish on house prices. I think this year you'd be hard pressed to be too bullish. I think it will be a big year for housing.
Yes, I do too. And I haven't seen it yet, but let me make another prediction. Somebody's going to call it a boom sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be honest, like the first sign of rising prices, you get media stories about, you know, should the central bank be targeting housing prices? But it's, you know, as any experienced commentator would know, well, that's not the Reserve Bank's mandate. The thing is with this cycle, it's been driven by home buyers. We've got more people than ever now paying down their mortgages rather than on interest only. And the share of investor loans is a record low. So there's absolutely no reason for there to be macroprudential intervention. Only if there was a decline in or a deterioration in lending standards would we see any changes. So, you know, assuming we get through COVID okay, I think the next 3 years will be very, very bullish for housing.
Well, we haven't yet seen what Josh Frydenberg told us about at the end of last year. There's been nothing I've read or nothing I've heard from the banks say about this loosening of lending criteria coming up in March. So that, if anything, may make it a bit easier to get a loan. But as all these people are coming back into the market, Pete, there's a drying up of stock. There isn't much good stock. And one of the things that happens after every downturn is a flight to quality. So certain properties are doing really well. We know that during booms, people buy anything just to get in. But at the moment, it's the lack of good stock that's also going to underpin property price growth.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess you would always expect to see low stock over December, early January. But even accounting for that, CoreLogic's numbers, well, they're at the lowest levels we've ever seen. I mean, they're not far off half where they were a few years ago for this time of year. Now, more people now will start to list, and that's good. It means activity can pick up. But not to put too fine a point on it, there's more buyers around than there are sellers. So that's not going to improve anytime soon. And I think that's one of the reasons that people are reaching for a buyer's agent. There's a bit of a desperation out there to find good stock. And it's pretty hard to come by if you're not well-organized, well-connected and decisive.
I've also noticed a change in mood in the sellers. So at the end of last year, there was a bigger opportunity to get off-market properties and people were just happy to sell and move forward. At the moment, sellers are buyers and buyers and sellers. So they're wondering, what am I going to do if I sell my property? What am I going to buy? And they're holding on. More people are going to auction and they're not prepared to sell before auction. Why would they when you're getting the strong auction clearance rates we've seen in the first couple of weekends of the year?
Yeah, that's right. And it's a bit the same sometimes with these off-market and pre-market properties. I think in a soft market, you can pick up some amazing deals. But at the moment, I think there's a general expectation that prices are rising. And I think vendors are pretty keen to cash in on that. You know, I guess they're probably looking the same as we are, thinking, well, these next few years are probably going to be pretty good. So why rush to sell at a low price?
Sure. So while Australia is in isolation with regard to COVID, we're not in isolation with regard to the general world economy. And this year, I can see the world's economy, even though it's going to pick up, as the International Monetary Fund said, still have some challenges. And there's those geopolitical problems with China that are still going to play out. That could cause a bit of a challenge to us moving forward.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one. And I think that could be an ongoing issue for potentially the next decade and beyond. I think there are political tensions, particularly between China and the West, but also in many other parts of the world as well. And globalization, it's been a big trend, but it's really under threat at the moment. I think if you look at the economies that are doing well, there's only really a handful. There's effectively China and Taiwan, and Vietnam, surprisingly, has really got on top of COVID, and that's doing well. And then you've got Australia and New Zealand. So obviously that's really bullish for Australia's iron ore exports. And we've seen those shooting through the roof. China just can't get enough of our iron ore. But there are some tensions there. And obviously we don't have Chinese students coming in the same way as we did. Same for tourists. And in fact, a lot of the students I noticed in the monthly numbers are now drifting back to China and India. So there's a few things there that will have a knock-on impact. So it's a delicate balancing act because there's a political issue here as well. It's not just about what's best for Australia's economy. There's a real ideological issue that needs to be resolved. And I guess it's not an easy fix. So this is probably going to continue for quite some time.
Sure. So there are still challenges ahead. There's challenges for our economy and for certain sectors of our property market. But, Pete, I think now is a great time to be optimistic. It's a good time to take advantage of what's really the beginning of the next property cycle. If you look back, we've only just got to the property values that we reached the previous peaks of 2017. And that's just the way the cycle works. We've had a downturn, which wasn't as bad as other downturns. We've had a bit of a stabilization phase, and this is the beginning of an upturn. And this opportunity doesn't come up that often. So I hope people, by listening to this podcast, by reading your regular blogs, our blogs, are going to take advantage of that. Now, I know every day you come up with charts and commentary. So if people want to get more information from you, where should they be finding it?
Easiest place, just Google my name, Pete Wargent, Blogspot. I write a daily blog there, so there's always plenty of information. And gosh, if I was trying to think of how best to position yourself, well, one key piece of advice, I think you already sort of said it indirectly, and that's try and focus on quality, not quantity. I think in a property boom, sometimes, you know, the worst loans are written in the best of times. So just be a bit careful out there. Don't buy in a panic just because everybody else is. Try and focus on buying something of good quality that you'd be happy to hold through any market. I think that's the key. When things are hot, don't just rush out and buy any old rubbish, because you'll look back in a few years and wonder why you did it.
Makes sense, because a lot of people say a rising tide will lift all ships, so all properties will go up. And while they may, they won't go up at the same rate. And because everyone's got their own finance restrictions, capacity, cap, they can only buy a certain number of properties, you really should own the best assets. So moving forward, it's the quality of your asset that will make a difference to your investment success rather than the quantity.
Absolutely. And remember what Charlie Munger said as well, never interrupt compound interest unnecessarily. Let time do the heavy lifting for you, but that only works if you buy well.
Sure. So in other words, a small change in the increase of compounding, if you buy in an area that goes up at 7-8% or 5-6% when on average we may only get 3-4%, that doesn't look like much initially, but it does so over time, which leads us to another discussion. Where will those areas be? And maybe we'll just leave that in limbo for our next chat so that we can have a bit of a talk about what sort of properties and what locations will do better. Look forward to catching up with you again real soon, Pete.
Sounds good. Cheers, Michael.
In a moment, I'm going to share my mindset message with you, and I'm going to teach you a strange way to attract wealth. I think you're going to enjoy what I'm about to tell you. But before I do, I'd just like to follow on my conversation with Pete, where we said that it's really the beginning of a new property cycle. This is a great opportunity. Don't let it pass you by. But I also wanted to remind you that not all properties are going to outperform. And as we said at the end of my chat with Pete, you're really going to need to own the right sort of properties, because moving forward, there are going to be certain segments of the market that just can't keep going up because wages aren't going to go up and inflation won't be as strong and economic growth won't be as strong in certain segments of the market. So to get some property investment success moving forward, you're going to need more than the buyer's agent. You're going to need more than the property strategist. In my mind, you're going to need a holistic approach to wealth to give you the right direction, guidance, and wealth-producing results. Hey, by the way, that's what my team at Metropole offer, and I'm unashamedly suggesting that whether you're a beginner or a seasoned property investor, we'd love to help you formulate an investment strategy. We'd like to do a review of your existing property portfolio. We'd like to help you get your property investments to the next level. So why not go to metropole.com.au, find out about our range of services, and we'd love to be part of your wealth creation journey, because we have strategic property advice, buyer's agency, wealth advisory, property management, renovations or development. metropole.com.au.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
In my mindset message today, I'd like to talk with you about a strange way to attract more wealth. Now, at the risk of sounding woo-woo, I'm going to share with you a, let's call it, non-practical way to attract more money, success, and wealth. Sure, I teach many hardcore techniques in my blogs, in my podcast, in my writings, but another side of increasing your success and your wealth that's equally important has to do with what's going on between your ears. And I'm talking about how valuable you believe you are. Now stick with me, because this could be a game changer for you. The late, great Jim Rohn taught, work harder on yourself than you do on your job. Now, you've probably heard me quote Jim Rohn on this point before, but I'm not talking about working on yourself with regard to investments or money or finance knowledge. But my point today is, by working harder on yourself, you bring greater value to the marketplace. And when you bring greater value to the marketplace, your income increases. Now, this isn't just if you're in business, serving your clients or your prospects or your patients, but it's also if you're an employee, because you bring more value to your boss, to your employer. But it goes beyond that. When you sincerely work hard on yourself, you naturally develop a deeper level of confidence. And when your confidence increases, you make bolder choices. And when you make bolder choices, you experience breakthroughs. But it goes beyond that. When you're sincerely confident, that energy is felt by people around you, by clients, by prospects, by your employer, by other staff members, by people that you manage. And they in turn feel confident in you and your ability to produce results. And that naturally leads to more of whatever you're wanting in success in your life. There's a lot of people out there teaching techniques such as affirmations to increase your confidence. Now, to be honest, that's never worked for me. What has worked is investing in myself, whether that means paying for coaches, paying for mentors, going to seminars when we could, blocking off time to read, listening to podcasts, spending time exercising, improving my health. You don't increase your confidence levels by faking it, but you do by taking disciplined action, which shows that you value yourself. So here's my challenge for you today. Schedule at least 1 hour this week to do something that increases how you value yourself. And it doesn't, and it actually shouldn't be related to work. It should be something where you're working on yourself. Maybe it could be reading a good book. Maybe it's taking a walk with no electronics. Maybe it's meditating, yoga, exercise. But until you place a higher value on yourself, your clients, your employer, your partner, people around you won't place a higher value on you either. We covered a lot in today's podcast, and I enjoy my chats with Pete. He'll be back regularly once each month to give us a big picture overview of what's happening. And if you got benefit from today's show, why not help me on my quest to make more Australians financially independent by sharing this? There's a share button on every podcast app, or just tell somebody about it, or why not leave a review and tell the world about it? Any time I read out your review, as I'm about to for Prop Addict, who left a review on Apple Podcasts, if you email me, michael@metropole.com.au, I'll gift you one of my books. And Prop Addict said, always great insights and learning. I've picked up so much excellent information from your podcast. Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for the kind words. Now, if you want to catch me in between these podcasts, please go to propertyupdate.com.au, subscribe to my daily briefing, or you can join the private Facebook group where we share a lot of information that I don't share elsewhere. Just look at Facebook and go to the Property Update. Look for the Property Update private Facebook group, and I'd like to have you as part of my community. I'll be back twice a week. Hey, if you don't subscribe to this podcast already, please do, so you're going to be regularly updated. But as I said, I'll be back twice a week. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney Podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney Podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?